from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a rough week for Hillary Clinton. She's getting slammed for donations to the Clinton Foundation from foreign countries and for using a private email account while she was Secretary of State. Republicans aren't hesitating to paint her as a compromised candidate. The Clinton camp, still not in full presidential campaign mode, sort of hunkered down, and real questions about transparency and doing things right. This hour on Point, Hillary Clinton, foreign donors, private emails, and presidential ambitions. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you make of the Hillary Clinton headlines this weekend, this week, the donations, the email, the issues there? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later in this hour, we'll look at Republican presidential contenders courting billionaire dollars around the United States in recent weeks. But first, to Hillary Clinton's headlines. Joining me now from Washington is Rebecca Ballhaus. She writes about national politics and campaign finance for The Wall Street Journal. Rebecca, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Washington, Rosalind Helderman, political enterprise and investigations reporter for The Washington Post. Rosalind, thank you for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Listeners, you can link to Clinton coverage from both of these reporters at our website, onpointradio.org. Rebecca, let's look first at the donations to the Clinton Foundation. It's raised $2 billion since its inception. Some millions have come from abroad. What has come out here? Was it out already? The Clinton people say this is all on our website. Just outline for us exactly where the controversy comes in these donations.
So there are two points that we've looked at in the past couple of weeks. The first is in reviewing the list of donors that the foundation posts on its website. We saw that they have been taking in donations from foreign countries at an accelerating rate in the past couple years. While Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, the foundation stopped taking money from foreign governments at the request of the Obama administration. And since she left, they've started taking that money again, and that's within their right to do. But as she has clearly been making moves to set up her presidential campaign, that does pose a little bit of a conflict. The countries that have given to her recently include the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Australia, and also Canada's Foreign Affairs Department, which promotes the Keystone Pipeline. Hillary Clinton has been notably silent on what she thinks should be done there. So that's one aspect of a conflict of interest. The Post also reported that the foundation took a donation from the Algerian government while Hillary Clinton was at the State Department. The State Department has since said they're not concerned about that, but it does raise some ethics questions about going forward into her campaign.
Rosalind, I'm sorry, Rebecca. Please go ahead.
The second part of that is we've also looked at corporate donors and the long ties that Hillary has to corporations who lobbied the State Department while she was there and also gave to her foundation.
Yet another field, we may look at that as well. Rosalind, I wanted to find very carefully what happened here. Rebecca was saying they stopped while she was Secretary of State, the foreign donors. But is that precisely true? I thought that they had already had long-term commitments from donors before she became Secretary of State and that those contributions continued while she was Secretary of State.
Right. So what happened was there were a lot of questions about this when President Obama was preparing to nominate Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And so ultimately, there was a rather complicated memorandum of understanding signed between the foundation and the Obama administration. And what they said was that certain pieces of the foundation would stop accepting foreign donations entirely. Other pieces of the foundation, however, the language of the MOU said that they could continue to accept money from governments that had been giving money before. And if any government wanted to increase the size of its donation, or if a new government wanted to give, they could actually accept those as well, but they would have to submit that for review to a State Department ethics officer for a possible conflict of interest. And so what we found was that there were six governments, actually, that had been giving money prior to Hillary Clinton becoming Secretary of State, who, in fact, continued to do so while she was in office. And they included governments like Qatar and the Netherlands and a number of others. And then there was this one case that Rebecca just referenced, the Algeria case. Now, Algeria is a government that had not given previously. They gave a donation in the wake of the Haiti earthquake in 2010. And the foundation now agrees that that was a new donation. And under the terms of their own agreement, it should have gone to the State Department ethics officer for review. And it did not go. They accepted the money. It was never reviewed. And in fact, that was the year 2010 when Algeria actually showed a spike in spending on lobbying of the U.S. government to try to combat perceptions of human rights violations. The State Department itself has found human rights violations in Algeria. So that's been a problem.
So the six, as you say, in total, Kuwait, Qatar, Oman, Australia, Norway, the Dominican Republic, who already had ongoing relations there. Algeria came in during that time. Rebecca Balhaus, The Wall Street Journal, reports that out of the $2 billion or so the Clinton Foundation has raised in its lifetime, at least $48 million from overseas governments. So it's not like this is the vast bulk of the money that they're working with, Rebecca.
No, that's certainly not the case. I think the question is more of when, you know, as Rosalind said, when the foreign donations came in, and the fact that they've ramped up the donations they've been getting from foreign governments since she left and while she's been preparing for a presidential campaign.
What about now? Is the Clinton Foundation talking about changing its policy as she moves toward a formal presidential race, if that's where she goes?
They've said that if she does officially launch her campaign, that they'll likely return to a similar policy as what they had while she was at the State Department.
But that seems to have been, in other words, it would continue to go to a foundation that has her name on it. The ongoing contributions would continue while she's president of the United States, if that happened.
So to make it clear, while she was at the State Department, her name wasn't officially on the foundation.
But it would be. But it is now. It has been put there since she joined.
Right. And I think that if she launched, they haven't said yet what they'll do in this case, but I think if she launched a presidential campaign, she'd likely have to take her name off the foundation again.
And they've been very vague about how they would handle this issue. What they've said is that they would continue to handle those donations appropriately, but they haven't defined what appropriately would mean. And as I think you were just driving at, the previous arrangement required it to be submitted to a State Department's ethics officer. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's not a setup that they could arrange while she was running for president. So what exactly they would do about this foreign government issue, they've not yet said.
Back when her nomination was coming forward, then Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, ranking Republican at that time, called this foundation a unique complication that will have to be managed with great care and transparency. Has that happened here, Rosalind? Would you call this great care and transparency that's been exercised around these donations?
Well, certainly they've been more transparent than what is required for private foundations by law, and that is one of the defenses that they mm-hmm. repeatedly offer. Private charities are not required by law to release lists of their donations – of their donors, excuse me. And since the time of that agreement with the Obama administration, the Clinton Foundation has done that. They do annually post a list on their website of who has given, along with sort of a range of how much they have given cumulatively over time. That said, you mentioned Senator Lugar. In those inner confirmation hearings, he actually called for very specific additional steps. For instance, he said all donations from foreign entities should be reviewed by the State Department ethics officer, not just foreign governments, because, you know, in many countries, very wealthy individuals are very tied up with government policy, even if they are giving from their own accounts. And our analysis has found that a third of the foundation's largest donors, those who have given $1 million or more, are foreign entities, foreign citizens, foreign corporations, foreign charities, and foreign governments. So he called for that. And he also called for the foundation to release not just who has given over time, but also how much each person gives each year. That's really the only way you could tell whether it appears as though a donation is tied towards a specific attempt in time to influence government action.
Now, after Hillary Clinton left her position as Secretary of State, the name of the foundation was changed from the Clinton Foundation to the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. Rebecca Balhaus, with or without that name change, it's Clinton. She's Clinton. Is there any precedent for this, that such a large philanthropic, yes, nevertheless, a big money operation going on outside of government while a key person was ranking so high in government, even potentially president of the United States?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to think of one that goes on this, comes even close to this scale. And I think that's maybe why it's been difficult to know what will happen when she officially launches her campaign and exactly how to handle the donations while she was at the State Department.
Rosalyn, let's turn to emails for just a minute and describe the exact setup that Hillary Clinton arranged that is now getting so much scrutiny while she was Secretary of State.
Well, I'm not sure I can describe the exact setup because I think we're still learning every day new things about it. But the New York Times yesterday reported that Hillary Clinton did not have a government email account during the 4 years she was Secretary of State, which is a very unusual setup. She exclusively used a private account. And it appears as though those records, her emails, were not routinely and regularly saved for the public record, which has been in regulation since she took office in 2009 that's supposed to happen. In 2014, the State Department went to Secretary Clinton and said, as part of an update of the law, that they would like to have all of her emails to preserve for the record. And she turned over some 50,000 pages worth. And so they have said that everything that needs to be preserved has been preserved, and they've said they've been keeping in the within the law. But we're learning all kinds of new things about this. The Associated Press just reported this morning that she maintained a separate email server at her house, at her private residence in New York, that it's traced to the name of a person who does not appear to exist or doesn't seem to exist in public records. So there seems to have been some attempt, perhaps, but we'll see over time, to potentially hide this arrangement.
And this was the server on which her private email operated, on which she conducted official business.
That's correct. And so there are a lot of questions left to be answered on this.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Hillary Clinton's rough week, foreign government contributions to the Clinton Foundation in the spotlight, her private email used when she was Secretary of State, very much in the spotlight as well, questions about potential conflict of interest, about transparency here for a very prominent political figure with lots of experience in Washington who, by all expectations, is headed for an announcement that she will run for President of the United States. My guest, Rebecca Ballhaus with The Wall Street Journal, writes about politics and campaign finance there. Rosalind Helderman with The Washington Post is with us, writes about investigates and looks at politics there as well. Criticism coming from her own party. Here's former Democratic Representative Jane Harman, current president of the Wilson Center, telling Fox News Sunday she found the foreign donations to the Clinton Foundation troubling.
I think the appearance of what is happening is poor. And I think the process that they have, whatever that is, needs to be fully disclosed. And there has to be absolute transparency, and people will make judgments for themselves.
Democrat trouble there. Republicans have just gone to town at the CPAC. Conservatives getting together in Washington or just outside Washington. Here's Carly Fiorina taking jabs at Hillary Clinton.
Please accept and explain why we should accept that the millions and millions of dollars that have flowed into the Clinton Foundation from foreign governments do not represent a conflict of interest.
And Republican Senator Ted Cruz at CPAC.
We could have had Hillary here, but we couldn't find a foreign nation to foot the bill.
It's not just Republicans or Democrats. Here's Larry Sabato, professor of politics, University of Virginia, talking a week ago.
It's very unwise for Hillary Clinton to be associated with a foundation that is taking millions of dollars from foreign governments. This isn't just the appearance of a conflict of interest. It's a real conflict of interest.
And that's on the foundation front, the contributions front. Rebecca Ballhaus, on the email front, now we've got these 50,000-plus pages that have been turned over. But is anybody representing that this is all of the emails that she sent or on this private account as Secretary of State?
Well, what her aides have said since this news came out is that when the State Department approached her and asked them to turn over her emails, her advisors went through and took out the emails that were related to State Department business. So they're not saying that these are all the emails. I think they said they reviewed tens of thousands of emails. They're saying that these are the ones that are related to State Department business. And the complication there, of course, is that we're leaving that judgment up to them rather than up to the State Department.
Isn't that the whole point, Rosalind, of the rules around this, that is supposed to be within the government system so that people have complete access to it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a complication that comes when you intermingle private and public business. It's why the law has been amended to require officials to use only public accounts. So you're not in a situation of having to sort out what's public and what's private. But yes, the reason why the regulations that were in place in 2009 did require preserving records on the sort of the public record system of a specific agency was so that it could be the agency that would decide what needed to be preserved, what was classified, what wasn't classified, what was exempt from FOIA for other reasons, the Freedom of Information Act, and what needed to be preserved so it could be released to the public.
So here we are with them exercising their own discretion about what's been seen. What about precedent and the rules here? First of all, is it perfectly clear that rules were broken? Are there clear rules on this? And what about precedent? The Clinton camp says, well, Colin Powell used a private email. Others did.
So this is obviously an evolving area of both the law and practice. As you said, they've mentioned that other Secretary of States have used private accounts. Of course, there have only been four Secretary of State since email has been in common use. Is it clear they broke the rules? No, there's been no finding that they broke the rules, and they have insisted that they have not. One of the things that they have said repeatedly was that what she did was in keeping with both the letter and the spirit of the law.
But is that entirely true? Is it perfectly clear that that's true?
I think we're going to need some more explanation from them. I think we're going to need them to release perhaps legal findings from State Department officials that found that, in fact, she was in keeping with the rules and explained how and why.
Rebecca, what about that claim that it's within the letter and spirit of the law, including the National Archives and Record Administration regulations requiring that any email sent or received from personal accounts be preserved as part of the agency's records? Does that say, and you can decide what's relevant and what's not?
That's the area I think that's a little bit murkier. And the State Department's request last October for Hillary Clinton's team to turn over her private emails appears to have been a belated effort to comply with those regulations. But I think it's unclear, you know, who was a little bit late in complying with that law.
Isn't compliance supposed to be in real time so that if there's a Freedom of Information Act request that comes in, I mean, and requests did come in and came back empty because these emails weren't in the State Department system, as I understand.
Right. Well, the Times of this story did a story on how a lot of opposition research groups as well as news outlets have had a lot of trouble getting a hold of any of emails bearing her name. And I talked to one group yesterday, Friends of the Earth, that had filed a number of public records requests trying to find emails specifically bearing her name. And after a series of requests and lawsuits, it finally got a trove of emails from the State Department, but none of them came from Hillary Clinton. So I think that's one of the biggest issues here, is that nobody's been able to get a hold of her emails in recent years. Even if they just turned over these 55,000 that they're talking about at the end of December, it still prevented any outlets or other groups from actually being able to read those emails.
Let's go to our listeners a little here. Janet in Somerville, South Carolina. Janet, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. So I think all this nitpicking and gotcha after Hillary Clinton is crazy. She's got much more experience than Obama ever had. And I think that what we're forgetting is that Snowden had revealed all this diplomatic correspondence. It was very delicate. The State Department and the government is so easily hacked into that it would have been much more secure for her to have her correspondence that way. And she's released a lot of it. So I think I just need to get off this silliness and look at her record.
Look at her policy record. Janet, we've got it. Rosalind, what about the issue? Well, I mean, nitpicking and gotcha is one way of looking at it. Sort of trimming on expectations is another way. What about just security? Would her emails, she was Secretary of State after all, would these emails really be more secure on a server at her house than they would be in the government system?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think there are some significant questions being raised about that point. The idea of having a server in your house, even a house that is guarded by the Secret Service, I think most technology experts, and I would not claim to be one myself, but I think most would tell you that that actually significantly increases the possibility of hacking, which is a disturbing possibility for the nation's top diplomat at a time when there are well-known efforts by foreign governments to hack all kinds of government and private accounts in the United States.
Blaine in Concord, Massachusetts. Blaine, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Sure. I just want to preface my comments by saying that I am an independent, and I would vote for my wife for president. She's got her PhD in organizational psychology. So just full disclosure, I'm not a partisan nor a sexist. But I do have to say this is somewhat of a theater of the third to think that this isn't an issue for my fellow voters. I mean, to your previous caller, I would challenge her, any Hillary supporter, to show us the record. What are her achievements other than padding her bank account and racking up frequent flyer miles? I mean, at a certain point, I blame the citizen for putting these politicians in office. I mean, she's not the first politician to go down this road to think she's above the law and benefit from public service financially, and she won't be the last. But at a certain point, I hold my fellow citizens accountable, not the politicians.
So it looks above the law to you. Blaine, we've got it. Rosalind, what about this issue of who else knew within the administration? I mean, her emails in this case, if she's using this for official business, would have been coming from, you know, so-and-so at clintonemail.com, which doesn't look like Department of State or whatever the formal government email address would be. Does that mean that anybody who got an email from the Secretary of State during those years was right there at the top of the page, that this wasn't within the government system?
Well, presumably, yes. I mean, neither the White House nor the State Department have answered specific questions about sort of who knew, who signed off, in what time frame. One of the defenses they have offered, and we should note this, is that any time that she would have emailed someone else at the State Department who had a government account, those records would have been preserved from the end of the recipient. And that's a fair point. So a good deal of these records were probably preserved in that way in real time and not subsequently. However, it's worth noting that she obviously would have conducted some State Department business with people who did not work at the State Department, other foreign government officials, private citizens. And there is some indication that some of her top aides, in fact, used private accounts themselves as well. So there is a chance that there was some State Department business that went from her private account to the private account of an aide. And it's not clear that those were preserved or have been turned over.
Rosalind Helderman, Rebecca Ballhaus, please stand by. Adrian Elrod joins us right now, Vice President of Communications for American Bridge PAC. It's a Democratic super PAC formed by David Brock, who also founded the media watchdog group Media Matters, associated with the Clinton campaign, former Clinton campaign aide for Hillary Clinton for president. Adrian, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what about the conflict of interest question that is now raised over these foreign government donations that have come into the Clinton Foundation? And what about the private email use while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State? Does that look right to you?
Well, look, first of all, this entire thing has been blown so far out of proportion. Here's the bottom line. Secretary Clinton followed State Department precedent with regard to the use of email. John Kerry has said that he's the first Secretary of State ever to really rely primarily on official State Department email. Colin Powell used his personal email account. And when the State Department, via the National Archives regulation, requested Secretary Clinton to turn over some of her personal emails for preservation, she did. She turned over 55,000 pages of emails.
How do we know that that is all the emails that are relevant to her time as Secretary of State? How can we know that if it's at the discretion of her aides to turn them over?
Well, first of all, there was actually a report today in ABC News that said that a Clinton aide said that anything that pertained to her work at the State Department was actually handed over.
But all we have is their word for it, right? It's not the same as these flowing automatically into the State Department hopper.
Well, she was fully transparent. She turned over her emails.
She turned over those that her aides decided were relevant. But how are we supposed to know as citizens that that's the whole record of our employee, in effect, the Secretary of State?
Well, again, I'll go back to what I said previously. This has been really blown out of proportion. And the bottom line is Secretary Clinton, when requested of these emails, turned them over, and 55,000 pages were turned over. And she followed the same precedent that previous secretaries of state used when it came to their personal emails.
What about foreign government contributions and the Clinton Foundation, Adrian Elrod? In general, how does this look when you've got such a high-ranking person and the same name on the door of each and foreign government money coming in, and in particular, the money that came in when she was actively Secretary of State?
Well, you know, first of all, Republican operatives and pundits have really tried to increase media scrutiny when it comes to foreign contributions to the Clinton Foundation.
Is that wrong? I mean, is there something wrong with scrutiny on that? There was a lot of talk about it even before she took the role of Secretary of State, saying we've got to be very careful here. We quoted former Senator Lugar earlier saying you could get into real issues here around transparency. Others are raising conflict of interest problems.
Well, first of all, she did not take foreign contributions when she was Secretary of State.
Yes, the foundation did. Yes, they did.
There was a situation with the government from Algeria, which I assume is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that entire donation went to earthquake relief in Haiti.
Through the Clinton Foundation.
Through the Clinton Foundation, exactly. But again, the bottom line is that first of all, that the foundation has all of these donations on their website. I mean, that's how transparent, above the board transparent the foundation is, by having all of these donations on their website. First of all, that's where the Wall Street Journal, which initially came out with this report, found these donations. So again, let's talk about being above the board and transparent. That's what the foundation did and continues to do. Number one, this was one donation, which, by the way, again, went to earthquake relief in Haiti. You know, the bottom line is the foundation is doing great work across the, not only in the United States, but across the globe. It's a huge $2 billion philanthropy that is trying to do, you know, great work everywhere and improving the lives of many people across the globe. And again, this is another attack by Republicans to try to distract from the real work that the good work that the Clintons are doing.
But what do you say to an ordinary citizen, whatever party, who looks at this and says, one family here, a foundation that now has all their names on its door, including Hillary's, she's running for president, and if they don't make some very big changes, this could look like a real conflict of interest problem here. Would Hillary Clinton move entirely away from the foundation? Would they stop taking foreign government contributions entirely if she became president?
When you say making big changes, what changes do you think should be made? I mean, again, this is a foundation that is doing amazing, amazing work across the globe.
Well, that may be true, but nevertheless, one could easily seek favor by ladling cash into its coffers because it's her husband who has run it, and it's her name also now on the door.
Well, look, I think if you ask any donor who has given money to the foundation why they're supporting the foundation, they would say it's because we support all of the great, amazing work that the foundation is doing across the globe.
I'm sure they would say that. Whether that's good enough for voters sizing this up, another question. Adrian Elrod at Communications for American Bridge PAC, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Rebecca, everything is on the website. Is that true? And if so, then how big a transparency issue can there be around foreign donations?
It's true. Everything's on the website. There are, you know, to be clear, there's over 300,000 donors listed there. So, you know, it's a big project delving into those. But it's true that the foundation posts all their donors on the website. They are transparent in that way.
Rosalind, you heard the not official but sort of spokesperson for the Clinton View here saying, no big deal, this is overblown, move along. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they have been saying, and it's what they will continue to say. And there are certainly a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters who are going to agree with that point of view. You know, I don't know that answering all the questions by saying, essentially saying I don't have an answer for that, but this is no big deal. I don't know if that works with everyone.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
I
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at Hillary Clinton's rough week in the headlines over foreign contributions to the Clinton Foundation, over her use of private email when she was Secretary of State. Rebecca Ballhaus is with us from the Wall Street Journal, Rosalind Helderman from the Washington Post. Hillary Clinton, last night at the Democratic Women's Group Emily's List 30th Anniversary Gala there. Closing remarks right here.
Let's keep up our pressure. Let's understand what we're facing. And let's go forth and win some elections. Thank you all very much.
Are people looking to make political hay out of these headlines? You bet. Are there issues here that can be troubling? Well, Sunlight Foundation, which looks at transparency in government, certainly says so, and others as well. Let's hear from our listeners. Mackenzie in Nashville, Tennessee. Mackenzie, you're on.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Whether Hillary Clinton took donations to her foundation, foreign donations to her foundation, whether the use of her private email is a conflict of interest, I would say yes to all of those. And I voted for Bill Clinton. I've been a fan of their political leanings and policies, maybe not their personal actions. For me, I think she's handed the Republicans on a plate, you know, something else to attack her. The unfortunate situation, though, is I don't agree with either of these things that she's doing. I think that it's really dumb. I think that it's, again, an above-the-law behavior, mm-hmm. Which we've seen, you know, in Bill Clinton's time, and I think this is something that they just do. Unfortunately, I would still vote for them because I want to see her in office and her policies in effect. So, personally, I think that there's a lot of sneaky, snaky behavior going on. But whether it's, you know, say her up against Jeb Bush, I'm going to vote for her because I want her in office and her political leanings in office.
So you're still in the camp, just a little less happy being there maybe than a week ago. Mackenzie, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Emily in Newton, Massachusetts. Emily, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was a Clinton supporter up until yesterday. And the fact is there's a reason that we have separate work and home emails. Everybody I know uses their work email to email everything having to do with work. And I think she's lost my vote. I mean, maybe if I were looking at Jeb Bush versus Clinton, I might have to rethink that. But as far as the primary goes, I think she's lost my vote.
That's pretty serious. That's a big policy choice right there. And she would lose it because you don't think she was adequately transparent in using private email?
I think it shows an incredible lack of judgment. And the reason we have these separate emails is there has to be oversight. There has to be an opportunity for the government to be able to see what's going on. And the fact that she had such poor judgment, it, not only was it sneaky, but it was just completely stupid.
Of course, this was set up as she became Secretary of State. It appears to have been set up for the purpose of handling exactly this email traffic. But Emily, her camp now says, we've given them all the, we've given 50,000 pages of emails to the State Department. What else do you want?
You know, I am a hardcore Democrat. I wouldn't trust a Republican who said that, so I can't trust a Democrat who says that.
Emily, we've got it. I appreciate your call. One more. Brendan. Brendan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, because of Citizens United,
yeah,
and corporations and wealthy people that contribute anonymously, and so many corporations are international, isn't there already a flood of international money coming into our elections?
Let me put that to our reporters, who both write about politics and campaign finance. Rebecca, the flow of foreign money into our election system, even with Citizens United, I mean, there's a lot we don't know now, but what about foreign money?
That's a fair question. I think it's true that there's a lot we don't know about a lot of outside groups that are spending money on elections and where their donors are coming from. In terms of super PACs do have to report all their donors and are not allowed to take foreign donations. So I think that the transparency level is probably pretty similar there. But it is true that the comparison between the foundation and some of these nonprofits that don't have to disclose their donors is that the foundation is likely more transparent there.
More transparent.
In other words, they're going to be saying, but the caller's question is a little different. Is there foreign money all over the place? Is that a proper perception of what's going on in politics? Or are you saying, as a Wall Street Journal reporter who's on this, we don't know?
I don't think that foreign money is what is propelling elections. I don't think that these nonprofits are taking a lot of foreign donations. But it is true that we don't know the identity of all of the donors that give to these nonprofits.
We're going to talk in a moment about Republicans going hat in hand to some very big donors just in these last few weeks. Linda in Mansfield, Ohio. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess this is the same Hillary who said, what difference does it make? So we had some dead people in a foreign country and we couldn't figure out whether it was the government's lack of oversight, lack of support or whatever. Just brush it off. You know, this is why young people don't vote. They are so tired of politicians who constantly obfuscate. I mean, you can ask them a question that has only one of two answers, yes or no, and they never get to it. Just like those people you interviewed. And thank you, Tom, for doing the best interview I've ever heard on NPR, not letting them off the hook. Thank you so much.
Linda, thank you very much. Let me get one more. Vicki, Greenleaf, Wisconsin. Vicki, you're on.
Yeah, I think a previous caller kind of touched on what I was thinking about. It's like I don't consider myself a stupid person, but I try to follow the logic about what's going on in the government and see how it's played. But the fact that there are all these politicians who do have private interests in, you know, private companies, and these private companies do business in foreign countries, and why is having, like, outside connections? I'm just not. Could you set me straight? The lines are blurred here for me.
I hear you, Vicki. It's sad that there are blurred lines. I guess people are really focused on this because Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State at the time that's under scrutiny here, and could one day be President of the United States. Rosalind, what's it going to take if she goes on down this road to give people confidence that this very large philanthropy, the Clinton Foundation, with her family name on the door, won't be presenting conflicts of interest forward going?
Well, I mean, one thing that her folks always say, which is absolutely true, is that nothing will convince the Republicans. They've put out web ads about this. I think you played some folks mm-hmm. from CPAC. So there's a certain level that there is nothing they can do.
But for an ordinary level-headed donor who wants to feel sure that there's not a conflict of interest here and that influence isn't being bought at the highest levels of American government.
I mean, they could make an announcement that they won't take foreign government money. They could make an announcement that they won't take money from foreign individuals. I mean, that would cut off, particularly the foreign individuals, that would cut off quite a lot of their money and would seriously hamper the charitable work that they do. So it's a difficult bind.
Rebecca, can you see a way to make a clear, clean line here?
I think that will probably be tricky, but I think it is something they will have to address.
It's on the Clinton's plate right now, and I'm grateful to the two of you for helping us look at it. Rebecca Ballhaus with The Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much for joining us from Washington today, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me.
And Rosalind Helderman with The Washington Post. Rosalind, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can link to Rebecca and Rosalind's reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. In a moment, Republican 2016 hopefuls go wooing super-rich donors. This is On Point. Republicans have a crowded field of contenders for the party's 2016 presidential campaign nod. Right now, well before primary season, they are in a battle for billionaire dollars, crisscrossing the country to wherever big money meets to lock up deep pockets or try to, talking about donor agendas. The New York Times' Nick Confessor has been following the Republicans, following the money, and joins me now from New York. Nick, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Nick Confessore, what about this pilgrimage trail? How many stops have there been so far? Why is this the season? Who are they talking to?
Well, there have been about 6 or 7 stops so far that we know of. And what you see are the candidates flying essentially from one vacation resort to another. It's where big donors spend the winter months, ski resorts, Southern California, Florida. This is basically where the donor primary takes place in the new year. Partly this is because we just had an election. There's often these kind of setup meetings early in the first year of an election cycle, so it's partly the normal timing. But it's also really directly a consequence of Citizens United. In the old days, a couple of presidential elections ago, you could only raise $5,000 apiece from these donors. But now, if you can find 5 or 10 people who will put $1 million each into a super PAC that will support you, you can go from being a third or second tier candidate to a first tier candidate. So these meetings, these gatherings where essentially the big whales are assembling to audition you, are just much more important than in any previous election.
Nick, walk us through then the dance card of this last couple of months and the major meetings on this kind of money pilgrimage tour.
Well, I think the biggest one is the seminar hosted by Charles and David Koch. It's typically held in the Coachella Valley out in California near Palm Springs. Every year, about 300 donors who are, for the most part, conservative but not always Republican party donors will gather at a closed press hotel for meetings and discussions of policy. And to see the candidates talk about issues, essentially to kind of kick their tires and check their teeth. This is an important stop. It's the single biggest concentration of big donors who are comfortable giving to outside groups.
Which of the Republican contenders attended this one?
Well, we saw that Marco Rubio was there, senator from Florida. Scott Walker, the Wisconsin governor, was there. Ted Cruz, the Texas senator, was there. And Rand Paul, the Kentucky senator, were all there, and three of them took part in a policy debate on American jobs.
So that's for 300 or so donors, and these are quite deep-pocketed potential donors, well beyond the Koch brothers, who are about as deep pockets as you can find.
Yeah, it's not just the Koch brothers. It's often a misnomer that it is the Kochs themselves who are contributing all this money. What they do is organize and supervise a network of donors that pour money into a structure of organizations that do political ads, grassroots activity, veterans outreach, Hispanic outreach. So they're kind of in charge of this one club. And then a few weeks later, you have the Club for Growth, which is actually called a club. Now, it's been around for a long time. And the Club for Growth is best known for financing primary challengers to Republicans who they think are squishy or too moderate on taxes and spending. And that took place last weekend at the Breakers, a very nice hotel in Palm Beach, Florida.
There you had Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, all in attendance.
That's correct. And remember, this is a group that kind of made its name in primaries. So some big donors are less apt to get involved in a Republican primary. The Club for Growth is important because its specialty is getting involved in primaries. They have not been a big player in presidential primaries in the past, but all indications are that they are seriously considering doing so in this election season.
Las Vegas has seen the money tour come through as well. What was there?
So in April, we will see the Republican-Jewish Coalition spring meeting. Rick Perry of Texas will be there. This organization is chiefly bankrolled by Sheldon Adelson, the casino billionaire and Israel hawk. What he cares about is Israel. He cares about having the candidates on record before him and some of his friends who also care about the issue, essentially cleaving to their viewpoint on the Mideast. And I think everybody who goes out to that event, speaks at it, understands that Sheldon Adelson is one of the biggest political donors in the country, that he has shown he is willing to spend tens of millions of dollars to support somebody he likes in a primary. It's a very big deal. It's a very high-stakes appearance.
The Koch brothers get a lot of people together, but Sheldon Adelson is sort of his own show, and sometimes it's literally a one-man band that they'll show up for. Bruce Rattstetter in Iowa, another stop on this tour, and it's just to talk to him.
Essentially, yeah. He is going to have everybody out there to talk about the Iowa business of agriculture, which includes a lot of companies that he is involved in, pork production, ethanol, and he's pretty clear about it. He wants the candidates to come out there and say that we'll defend ethanol subsidies, we'll defend the agricultural industry in Washington. It is about getting these guys out there and on the record on the issues that matter to him and his business. It's kind of amazing when you think about it.
One man and his money, I mean, could it have the effect of determining policy for an entire administration if they make some agreement sitting with him in Iowa so early in a campaign season?
I think certainly if they make a commitment, then it matters. And look, it's very different on the Republican side this time because they have a very competitive primary. There's a lot of competition for the allegiance of these donors, and it creates a real incentive to tailor your message for these people. I imagine we'll see something similar on the Democratic side if we ever have a competitive primary on the left. But right now, if you were Hillary Clinton, you were not under a ton of pressure to line up and kowtow to donors. The donors, by contrast, on the Democratic side, are begging for a seat at the table of the Clinton campaign. It's the only game in town.
Is the GOP presumption then at this point that without the backing of at least some of these big whales, as you call them, you can't win?
Absolutely. I think it's very hard to get through, I should say, it's going to be almost impossible to get through the Republican primary without a super PAC behind you that has $20 to $50 million, period. I guarantee you that. I'd be very surprised if the winner of the primary did not have a big super PAC behind them.
That means billionaire donors. Nick Confessori with the New York Times, thanks for your reporting and thanks for being with us today, Nick.
Of course, anytime.
Nick Confessori's piece, you can link to it. GOP race starts in lavish haunts of rich donors. It's at our website. The link is right there at onpointradio.org. Tomorrow in this hour, we will talk about the big new Justice Department report on a pattern of racial bias in the Ferguson Police Department and ask, now what? Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.